We no longer have to distinguish between this is meaningful discourse and this is meaningless discourse, in which we might be perfectly satisfied and happy to say, this discourse sensitizes me and works for me. And if it doesn't do so for you, that's fine too. You have your own private discourse. All we need to agree to is a public discourse that cruelty is bad, that solidarity is good, and that humiliation is unacceptable. Think of what kind of utopia that would be. A utopia in which your private acts of self-fulfillment, your private acts of perhaps you paint at home, perhaps you write your own little poetry, would never be seen as selfish, as alienating, as distinguishing between you and the rest of the society, in which you could be as much an individual as you choose without losing your sense of the we intention of a society and culture. It's also a sense in which the philosopher takes on a new role. He's no longer the master sitting on high, telling people in the history department, you better tighten up your explanation schemes. And people in the literature department, so much stuff and nonsense, you're deconstructing yourself to death. Rather, the philosopher would be a sort of jack of all trades. Instead of standing above the various disciplines, he and the various departments up in his super high ivory tower saying, good in science, bad in math, or whatever, he'd be running between the places, running over to the anthropology department saying, give me something to think about. And I'm gonna, as soon as I get that, I'm gonna bring it over to the historians and say, have you heard what they're talking about in the anthropology department? How they're thinking about the human project now? While I'm at it, why don't I go over to the literature department and see what they have to say about it? Maybe they'll show me a way of redescribing my own project such that I can bring the anthropologist and the historian together. He says that we're already beginning to see such a field, such a new project. And it's not the philosopher per se, though it is Rorty and it is some other philosophers. He says that figure he wants to call the literary critic. The reason is because I think quite factually he represents literary critics don't talk about literature anymore. Or not primarily. More often than not, they talk about politics, they talk about philosophy, they talk about Kuhn's and science. Right? You're just as likely to find a, quote, person hired as a literary critic who knows just as much about, if not more, about the history of science than he actually does about, say, Joseph Conrad's books. And he says that's not something we should fear. It's evolved that way for a good reason. Because philosophy made the mistake of trying to stand above instead of connecting, instead of drawing together. And such a literary critic, I would urge, in fact, that we drop the term literary critic, my own feeling, and replace it with a broader term even than that, the cultural critic, because literary criticism, I think, has certain connotations, which cultural criticism doesn't. But the cultural critic then would be a person who's an eclectic, who reads a bit of Kuhn, who reads a bit of Quine, and then maybe goes and looks at a bit of Picasso, listens to a bit of Charles Ives, perhaps, maybe even a little rap music while he's at it, maybe even watches a bit of MTV, watches current films, and talks about how it all hangs together, or how it doesn't. When it doesn't. Talks about how this novel has political implications, or this political movement has literary implications, or this scientific movement has historical implications. In fact, I think the beauty of that utopia is that each of you would become cultural critics, that taking a course like this and other courses and reading your own books are not only projects of private self-creation and fulfillment, which I think they are, but in fact mean that you're all becoming your own cultural critics. You're all making yourself your own lovers of wisdom, your own philosophers.